Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Ziegenkopf have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots first! Bobby Hull!
Juneau trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bourque and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brunet carries in, rolling in front of the net, and shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again! Scores! Desjardins!
All right, hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com, where we're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, which include the IR line combinations, goalie report, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, October 5th, Friday, just kicking off the National Hockey League season a couple of days in. Everyone but about five teams have played their first game: L.A., Edmonton, Florida, Tampa Bay, and the New Jersey Devils, the only teams that have not played as of yet, but they will obviously soon be playing soon. Lots to cover. We're going to, you know, sort of dedicate today's whole show to the Fantasy Report, sort of kick it off with an extended version of the reports, which, you know, usually takes about half the show, but because we want to go team by team, talk about their line combinations and their injuries a bit in depth, especially those line combinations which we've all frankly been speculating about. And all except those five teams that I mentioned haven't played yet, we've now seen what they've done, at least here in the beginning. Obviously, it doesn't put any of these line combinations in stone. As we all know, it can be a fluid thing, especially when you have the impact of injuries and players coming back healthy. But enough talking about it. George, I'm definitely going to ask your opinion on some of these situations as we go through it. I'm going to start off with the combination of the IR and the line combination report, and maybe sort of sprinkle in a little rookie conversation in there as well before we eventually get to the goalie report later in the show. So let's kick things off alphabetically as we usually do in Anaheim. A lot of these, are not all that surprising, but Kessler with a hip injury. He is traveling with the team. Now, we've talked about this a bunch of times throughout the summer and in September when we're really focusing on our sort of fantasy preparation and the NHL preparation of the season, that there's been a lot of talk that maybe he should take a month or two or even the first half of the season off like he did last year. Some people even saying in the middle of the summer that it really would be a smart thing for him to take the whole season off, but he's such a competitor that it didn't seem realistic that he was going to want to play. So, George, it does seem like he's going to play sooner rather than later, within the first couple of games, within the first couple of weeks, but here is a perennial known name. And year in and year out, he is fantasy-owned, very low fantasy ownership this year so far to begin with, which, again, shouldn't really be that much of a surprise. But, George, whenever he comes back, whether it is, in the first couple of games or in the first couple of weeks or even the beginning of November, is he somebody that you're looking at as an appealing option for somebody to pick up and sort of, pick up where you left off? He's going to give you a certain amount of guaranteed numbers, or is there too much trepidation that you think his 6% ownership that he has on average between Yahoo and ESPN, is where I looked up those numbers, is he still an appealing guy to snap up once he comes back, or at least put on your watch list to see how he develops? Or is this a guy that you're not touching with a 10-foot pole until he proves he can put up the numbers that we sort of know him for? So let's kick off my questions to you, George, with the Kessler question. What do you think?
I mean, I just say it all the time. Center's deep. So he's not going to be somebody I automatically pick up, though. Certainly not. Probably not even close to that. Is somebody I might think about? Well, sure. We don't know what your team's going to look like in a month, 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever it might be, next week. You don't know. I assume going into this, we just had our draft, so I assume going into opening night, you're feeling pretty good about your team, that you don't have any center problems, but maybe you're going to suffer two injuries. And then things will look immensely different. And maybe you have to go out and grab him. He will be a name center available here. But, excuse me, what are you expecting? 8 goals last year in 44 games. You want to prorate that? That's not even 20 over a full season. Only had 22 the year before in a full season. 21 the year before that in a full season. 20 the year, I mean, he's a 20. He's about an 18 to 20 goal scorer at this point in his career. That's just what he is. So I say it again. What are you hoping for here? And he's 34 years old. It's not like he's going to get better. He's not. He may have trouble playing top 6 minutes. You know, maybe he won't be on the first or second line. Maybe he's a third line player from now on. So bottom line is this. At this point in time, no. I don't see him being all that much fantasy ready. But, you know, if you were to suffer an injury or two, things could be completely different here. But at this point, I mean, you know, on the sites, maybe he's just like that scout player, that player you'll watch just so you're aware of him. But I'm not looking forward to pick him up when he becomes available, no.
Yeah, I specifically want to ask you that question, kicking off the show, not just because of Anaheim against the alphabet, but, you know, because he is that named player, and especially in those more casual leagues where people, you know, maybe aren't, you know, avid hockey fans or rabid hockey fans, you know, they might sort of gravitate that. So I kind of wanted you to sort of put out that warning there to kick things off. Continuing with the Anaheim Ducks, Kase, who a lot of people were sort of pretty high on, including myself, drafting a good amount of leagues, starts off the season on the IR with concussion. He is considered out indefinitely. You know, obviously with concussions, as we always say, you really can't and shouldn't put a timetable on it. So do expect him to be out at least a couple of weeks before he comes back. The interesting thing is where he'll come back into the lineup when he does play, which we'll get to in a minute. I just also want to cover that Patrick Eves coming back from that bad injury situation and disease that he had last year. He's over that, but he has a shoulder injury, which has landed him on IR to start the year. He is out and starting to practice with the team, but he is expected to be out at least a couple of weeks before he comes back and plays for the Anaheim Ducks. And looking at the line combination to start things off, especially with those injuries impacting things, Torrey Terry getting a chance on the top line right wing with Getzlaff and Raquel. I mentioned they gave a shout-out on one of our last shows to Comtois, the rookie who really sort of surprised and made the club and ended up at least starting their first game on the second line left wing with Henrique and Silverberg. Third line is another rookie, Sam Steele, centering Compliano and Aberg, who they plucked off waivers from Edmonton. So, George, I kind of want to touch on the rookies a little bit and sort of how intrigued you might or might not be. And I know that's a little bit of a hard question here to start things off because you don't know what you're going to get from rookies. But it's more about, I guess, the possibility that you think they might have a reasonable chance to stick somewhere in the top six, specifically when Kase and Eves in particular come back. I mean, so is it a situation here where you think those guys automatically going to bump, you know, those rookies out? Or do you think that there's a sort of a decent chance, you know, because it did look pretty likely that Kase was going to be the right wing on the on the second line with Henrique, which would imply that Terry's got a chance to stick on the top line as long as he doesn't face plant itself. So I'm not saying, you know, that me or you are recommending, if you're in a fantasy league, to snap these guys up right now. But, you know, there's a certain level of interest or intrigue that you want to watch a situation and a certain level of, okay, I just know that's not going to last, so don't even bother thinking about it. So these opening lines for the Anaheim Ducks with these guys, you know, particularly Kase and Eves coming back, you know, like I said, do you think there's some fantasy possibility here, or is it just completely too early to even speculate on that, in your opinion? George?
When it comes to situations like this, I mean, it's kind of a foolhardy question. There's so much you don't know. Are they going to play full-time minutes? You already mentioned what happens when the injured player, the injured veteran comes back. Do they even have a job here? So you're looking for, it's a short-term answer. Once again, you're at the beginning of the season. All your roster should be set where you should be having questions like this. At best, these guys should be reserves. Dartboard shots you took late in your draft, which are fine. You see how they play out. This is a short week, so it's actually a perfect week to see how these things play out. You don't have to start these guys. You start your veterans, your players you trust more, and you go from there. Now, maybe there are a couple of teams that only had one game. Tampa Bay comes to mind. In week one, they only have one game. They haven't even played yet. Yeah, so maybe you want to start one of these rookies over I mean, I don't think it was Stamkos or Kucherov, but yeah, maybe over Braden Point. You know, maybe it was someone like that. That I can totally see. You know, you want to give it a shot, see what happens, because the rookie's playing two games while the veteran, the better player, is only playing one. Yeah, we all do that during the season. You know, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. But thinking about it long term, no, they're dartboard shots. You're just seeing what's out there. I'm not going to give it a whole lot of credence. You know, nobody knows anything right now. Season has barely started. You know, what line they're on, that doesn't mean anything. Because we all know these coaches all take it with their line. If they start in game one, that may not last a period, more or less a season. So that's why you really shouldn't get all broken about what line they're going to be on either. Things are going to change constantly. You know, really what you're looking for is how much patience does a coach have? You know, does he someone who's going to let him go for a couple of weeks, or is it a couple of shifts? You know, we see, or somewhere in between. That's where it usually is. You know, coaches tend to tinker with things. You and I have gotten on coaches throughout the years for not having enough patience and letting lines gather chemistry. This way they work better together. So bottom line is this. Like I said, with all these guys, a majority of guys you're going to talk about, yay, you see what happens, fine. They're dartboard throws that you should have gotten late in your draft. They're not, you know, they give us a hot start. I mean, there's certainly situations. I know in one of the leagues I play in, the league with you, I had to put three players on IR. And I thought about just taking three dartboard throws. I did. Just take three guys, three rookies, see what happens here. In the end, though, I couldn't do that. I went with veterans who I feel better about what I'm going to do, about what they're going to do to solidify my team. But it dawned on me, you know what? Maybe take three rookies. You know, we don't know much about. Just see if you hit, you know, you hit pay dirt. You know, that sort of thing. And then maybe it pays off, maybe it doesn't. But like I said, in my case, I couldn't do it. I'm more of a conservative owner. If you're looking for a risk-reward, then you go with a rookie. It ends up being, though, you're going to end up starting three, four rookies hoping that one pays off. Even if that one pays off, the other three may kill you. It ends up being a wash anyway. It's hard. It's hard for coaches in any sports to trust rookies. They generally don't.
Well, I really like a number of things that you said there, and I do want to sort of emphasize that, especially when I'm talking about the rookies and the line combinations here, this really is more of sort of a speculative thing, and very much when it comes to rookies, you know, I'm really not going to be saying that you're going out and snapping up any of these guys. It's really more of a, you know, hey, I'm starting the season, and maybe I kind of want to fill out some of my watch list of some guys that might be interesting to sort of maybe keep tabs on, because as the season develops over the next couple of weeks, over the next first 2 months, and maybe some players aren't working out, they're not producing, so I want to drop them, or you accumulate some injuries, that these are some of the guys, you know, that you're going to, you know, have kept tabs on, and maybe they will pan out to a situation where they might be appealing to pick up. So especially when talking about the rookies, I'm, you know, except maybe for a rare case or two, which obviously we'll get to, you know, as we go through the league, I'm not sort of suggesting going out and picking any of these guys up. And the only possible exception to that would be if you were in a very deep league, you know, and you already have some injuries and you're looking to sort of fill a hole or two on your roster. But continuing on with the Arizona Coyotes, a number of notable injuries to start the season here, with Gail Yuchuk probably being the most notable, is on IR with a lower body injury. He has not been cleared to practice, but he has been physically active, has been starting to skate on a regular basis. Does look like he's going to be out at least 2 or 3 weeks before he returns to the lineup. Similar situation with Dvorak on the IR with a lower body injury. He is skating. It is believed that it is related to the back injury that forced him to miss the last four games of last season. So obviously that sort of puts an undercurrent of extra worry there that, okay, now you have a, now you're telling me there's a possible lingering issue, injury issue with a top two or top three center, or at least expected to be on your team. Also, the rookie number one draft pick from this year, Hayton, with an undisclosed injury, he lands on the IR. So that is also interesting as well there. Chytron, with coming back from the injury, is described as aggressively rehabbing, still 2 to 3 weeks away before he returns to the lineup. And starting off the year with these injuries, particularly to Gail Yuchuk and Dvorak, who are expected to be, again, second and third line center, that's caused an immediate shift in the expected line here, as Keller is not playing with Stefan and Panik as expected. Fisher is the right wing on that line. And Keller moves to center, playing between Perlini and Hinz and Stroza. Dylan Strome centering Krause and Kempe are your lines to start the year there as well. In Boston, we told you on our last show, Krug with an ankle injury out 3 weeks, and then he's going to be reevaluated. Not necessarily expected to jump right back in the lineup after 3 weeks. He could indeed, obviously 3 weeks passes, but he evaluates him and they say, hey, you're great to go. You're in the next. That is certainly possible. But just know, especially for a player who has been widely drafted, it might be 4 to 5 weeks before he actually gets back in the lineup. And much to people's, or at least a lot of fantasy owners' relief, that top line in Boston does stay together with Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak. One interesting question here, which I'll get to in a second for you, George, is about their lineup situation. Second line, at least for their last game, was Krejci, DeBrusk, and Donato. Heinonen was the right wing on that second line in the first game, which obviously didn't go so well against the Capitals for the Boston Bruins. But in this second game, Heinonen was dropped down to the third line with Bradley and Bjork. Now, I guess the basic question here, George, for the Boston Bruins is that right wing a second line spot, because I've read from a number of different Boston beat writers that they said to start the season, it's expected that Donato and Heinen will essentially sort of switch on and off here and getting the opportunity to play on that second line. Donato in particular was a player that people have been fairly intrigued with and got a decent level of being drafted in a number of leagues. So I'm just wondering, he's got about 16 to 20% ownership in ESPN and Yahoo overall. But George, is this a situation where, again, talking back in the lineup, talking about your bench to start the season, are you just not touching this situation until it plays itself out and you know who's going to be the right wing? Or are you sort of willing to take a chance here for, again, the back end of your roster for a bench player? Is it worth it in your mind to even take that chance? Or would you tell those people that, 21 out of 5 fantasy owners out there who did draft a guy like Donato, maybe it might be a better idea to drop him and pick up somebody who's more secure to start the season? So, George, second line right wing in Boston, how would you handle approaching or your interest level in either of those two players?
All right. Once again, almost for any question you ask like this, the answer is going to be the same. You're in game one, game two. Coaches are still figuring it out. Only thing you're looking at is different as far as team situations. With Boston, we know they're going to churn things around because they need let's go with productive second line. We know the top line, Pasternak, Marchand, and Bergeron. We know that's one of the best lines in the game. So they need a second line that can be productive. And what I mean by that is that it's not going to come anywhere near the top line, but something that can produce some kind of offense, give them some goals. So they're going to churn it. That's exactly what they're going to do. Once again, we talked about this in other shows. They'll start off with one group, and they'll keep working until they find three that work together. But even once they do that, if it slows down for a couple of games, and it will, because no matter what three they put out there, they're not star players. You want to throw Krejci, DeBrusk, and Donato, that sounds like the best, but they'll go through periods where they're not doing anything because they're not stars. So they'll go through periods where they're going to slump, and Boston will then churn it again. That's what they're going to do. They're going to keep looking for players because they have no choice. They don't have a second-line player. They really don't. They have really top threes, and then they go down with the third-line players. They don't have the middle there. That's what's going to haunt them come the playoff time again. Same thing. So that's their issue here. They'll keep churning and churning and churning, like most teams. This is not a surprise here. I think Donato is worthy, even DeBrusk, worthy of a reserve on your roster. Depending on how many wings you start here, we all need reserves. All the guys who you start when they're hot. Assuming you're in a weekly lineup. Daily lineup, obviously, you start when they start. Makes life a little easier. But a weekly lineup, you start them when they're hot. And then you dump them when they're not. That's really the way the game is played here. It's sort of like that sixth outfielder in baseball. Same thing. When they're hot, you plug them into your lineup. But when they're not, you're at the bottom of your bench again, or you move on to the next hot guy.
All right, nice perspective on that situation, especially when it comes to now, because a lot of people are picking him to be a Calder favorite there. So, again, deeper league, I totally understand keeping him on your bench, sort of in the perspective that you put of George. But if you're in a more standard league, shallow league, a league that's sort of got like 15-size roster or not, I just don't think that's worthy to keep a guy like Donato or Heinonen even less so on your team. Looking at the Boston, the Buffalo Sabres, Bogosian, what do you know? Starting the season with an injury, lower body injury, he's got him listed as day-to-day. Hunwick, off-season acquisition, has a neck injury, lands him on the IR. Neither are really that earth-shattering, certainly for fantasy, but you know, probably just as much on the ice as well. I've always said that Bogosian could stay healthy. I think he's got potential to be a solid second-pair defenseman, but he's got to stay healthy first to prove that, and he just has not done it throughout his career. Line starting there, at least the top line is no surprise, as Eichel is centering Skinner and Reinhardt, Mittelstad centering Sobolka and Okposo, Berglund and Tage Thompson with Sheary as well. And it should be noted, again, just one game, so don't make too much out of this, you know, but that Berglund, Thompson, Sheary line was clearly getting the second line minutes, where the Mittelstad line was just getting the third line minutes. Obviously, you need a dozen, two dozen games before you start really putting a lot of stock into that time of ice thing, but certainly start the first game or so, it did get my attention. Speaking of getting my attention in Calgary, well, first of all, with their injuries, Hamonic undisclosed, well, not undisclosed, I then ended up confirming that it was a facial fracture injury. He is listed as week-to-week, the situation before he comes back. Lindholm starting on the top line with Monahan and Gaudreau like we expected, but at least for the first game, James Neal, not in the top six, playing on the third line with Derek Ryan and Dubé. And again, just like George just said a couple of times already, don't make too much out of this just after one game, but it is certainly notable that he was not on the top in the top six like expected, and he was on the second power play unit. So just keep that in mind. Both Frolik and Zarnik sort of alternated shifts on the right side with Backlund and Tkachuk for this first game. In Carolina, we know Victor Rask has got the hand injury. He's going to keep him out for a couple of months. And no surprise that Jordan Staal, really second-line center, you know, maybe even third-line center at this point in his career in terms of the offensive output that he does, but he is going to be getting the top-line minutes with Justin Williams and the rookie Fogle there in Carolina. Aho, Teravainen, and Furland is your second line. And then kind of an all-rookie or relatively all-rookie third line of Nekas, Zykov, and Svetnikov sort of alternating with Brock McGinn there on that line as well. So, again, if you drafted Svetnikov, again, great. If you're going to have him on your bench and have him be a bench player, but if you think he was going to sort of start out and be a top six forward and give you a lot of production to start the year, you might want to pump the brakes on that as well. In Chicago, Khan, K-A-H-U-N, gets the opportunity to start the season on the top line with Jonathan Toews and DeBrincat. Brendan Saad on the right wing with Schmaltz and Kane. Anisimov, Kunitz, and Kemp, the rookie there, is your third line to start the season as well. In Colorado, Kemenev, with a leg injury, start the season on the IR. He's going to be out for a couple of weeks. And Andrea Ghetto, who was expected to be on the second line with Perfort and Yost, also has a lower body injury, going to be out 2 to 4 weeks before he returns. Of course, we got the same top line as we expected, Landeskog, McKinnon, and Rantanen. Colin Wilson, takes that spot on the second line next to Perfort and Yost. That's the line that you're sort of going to look for to sort of hope for more production in terms of having some more balanced attack. I'm not telling anybody to go out and pick any of these guys up fantasy-wise, but they're the guys you want to keep your eye on because they could potentially be that pickup 2 months into the season when you have that injury or you're dropping those players that aren't as productive as you expected. But Soderberg, Nieto, and Bork, got essentially the second line minute, at least in that first game there for the Colorado Avalanche. In Columbus, we know that Seth Jones is going to be out with a lower body injury for 4 to 6 weeks. Top line was indeed confirmed to be Panarin, Dubois, and Atkinson. Foligno, Wenberg, and Bjorkstad is your second line. Dubinsky, Josh Anderson, and Boone Jenner is your third line, and they got the most amount of minutes together in their first game. Again, I wouldn't make too much of that, but that's certainly a line that Tortorella is going to sort of be looking to take all their defensive minutes, but also kick in a little bit of extra offense as well. In Dallas, no surprise that Hanzel, with his back injury, is going to be out until at least the end of November, beginning of December. And also Stephen Johns with that head injury. He still has constant headaches, so it is going to be a while before it comes back, at least a few weeks. But he is on the ice, and sort of practicing and skating with the team. Nushitskin as well with the lower body injuries got enlisted as day-to-day. He missed their first game, but he is considered possible for their second game. No surprise that the first line is Seguin, Ben, and Radulov. Beza, Yarnmark, and expected to be Nushitskin as the regular right wing on that line, but Como did start on that line as well. In Detroit, lots of injuries, especially on the defense to start the year, but really wouldn't make a big of a difference with the guys that I'm going to list. Mike Green with a liver illness, going to be out 1 month. Cronwall, who was a very good defenseman in his prime and just isn't anymore, all due respect. Undisclosed injury is going to be out for a couple of weeks. Erickson, upper body injury, going to be out for at least a couple of weeks as well. Your top line is not Nyquist, Larkin, and Mantha. That is expected to stick pretty much all season. And after that, it's a little bit more of a big question. Athiasio was the centering Vanek and Applicator as their second line, at least in terms of the minutes that they got. The rookie, Rasmus, going to be the right wing for Nielsen and Bertuzzi as well as part of that top nine. And in Edmonton, and Raddy with an undisclosed injury listed as day-to-day. It's sort of questionable whether he's going to start this first game, although it is believed that he probably will. He's going to be on the first line with McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Pooju Jarvi, another guy who is sort of very interesting, in my opinion, to sort of keep an eye on, had a very good preseason. Again, you only put so much stock into that, but he does look like he's finally getting it, finally ready for that top 6 minutes and earn that second-line right-wing spot next to Drysdale and Lucic. So he is definitely a guy I very much put on my watch list to keep an eye on, unless, again, you are in a very deep league and you want to sort of put him on your bench. You know, I wouldn't sort of criticize anybody for doing that. So Ryder ends up on the third line with Strom and Yamato, who was a little bit of a surprise to make the team as well. Everything that I read said he still needs to sort of learn a little bit more of the two-way game and needs to put a little more bulk on his body before he's realistically going to make the team. But he also, not quite as good as a preseason as Pooju Jarvi, but enough, obviously, to make the team. I wonder if he's going to stick with the team. I think he is a prime candidate. Unless he sort of starts out the season strong for producing, I think he's a candidate to be demoted to the minors. Also with the injuries, Sakira, we know he has the Achilles injury that's going to keep him out indefinitely, but Russell with an undisclosed injury is on the IR. He's likely going to be out a week or so before he starts the season. In Florida, both Ekblad and Yandel have been listed as day-to-day for the last couple of days, but it is expected they're going to start the season just fine and in the lineup. And this is sort of a top six that one of the more we've been secure before even preseason started, and it is going to start out just as we expected with Barkov centering Bustad and Dandanov, Chochuk centering Hoffman, and Huberdeau there as well. It looks like the third line is going to be McCain centering Ventrano and Malgin as well. In L.A., we know Dustin Brown's got the thing injury. It's kind of going to keep him out for at least 1 month, but maybe as much as 2 months. The intriguing guy here is Vilardi, their rookie, top draft pick from last year, makes the team, but he has a back injury. It's landed him on IR. He is skating but not practicing. Going to be a couple of weeks before he comes back. And just because of those couple of injuries, Kopitar is going to be centering Kovalchuk and Aifalo to start the year. And your second line, which has kind of been what it's been, at least when they've all been healthy for the last couple of years, of Carter centering Toffoli and Pearson. The interesting thing will happen, and again, it's going to be a good month, maybe 6 weeks before we even have to even think about this. But when Vilardi comes back and Dustin Brown comes back, Brown's going to be on that top line. Is Aifalo going to be bumped off it? Probably, but it could be Kovalchuk, especially if they haven't developed any sort of chemistry there. But Vilardi, I would expect to centering that third line with Kempe and Aifalo. Again, this is just sort of a little speculative heads up, not suggesting that any of that should sort of drive you to make any moves. But Vilardi is a guy that I am sort of keeping an eye on, because he could be sort of an interesting player as the season develops. In Minnesota, Granlund, Eric Staal, and Zucker is your top line, with your official second line as Koivu, Niederreiter, and Parisi. They got the fourth amount of business, of ice time, I should say, together. Now, it could have just been the way the game went, but that was sort of interesting. I'm sort of intrigued by this official third line of Greenway, Coyle, and Erickson Ek. It's, a line that I'm sort of keeping my eye on, that I think if, George and I both described this team as sort of very much middle of the road, doesn't seem to really have much upside or a huge downside. But if they are going to be better than a lot of us are expecting, I think it comes down to that Greenway, Erickson Ek, and Coyle line and them succeeding. So, again, a couple of players or a line that you might just want to keep an eye on to see how they develop as the season goes along. In Montreal, we know that Shea Weber's got the knee injury, going to be out until December, and De La Rose, who they were really starting to like as a top-nine forward, heart problem. So he's out for evaluation right now. We really have no idea whether it's going to be a short-term thing or a long-term thing, but anything with the heart, obviously, is a notable thing. And line combinations, at least starting here in the first couple of games, a little bit surprising. People, Tatar is going to be on the left wing with Denault and Gallagher. That is your default first line in Montreal. But we are all expecting Drouin and Domi to be together. Domi is centering Lekkonen and Byron. And Kakanyemi is centering Domi and Armia. Now, when it comes to Kakanyemi, it is expected that because Pekonic is starting the season injured and missing the first couple of weeks himself, which obviously I forgot to mention or skipped over, this is kind of expected to sort of be a nine-game cup of coffee for him and then sent down. But, of course, you never know what's going to happen, especially if he kicks off the season really well for the Montreal Canadiens and the fact that they desperately need offense. So I expect him to go down. At least that's my call here to open the season. But keep your eye on the situation if, again, you do have a surprise. In Nashville, another situation of the lines played out exactly how we thought they would. Just like last year with that top six, Johansson, Arvidsson, and Forsberg is your top line. Turris, Fiala, and Craig Smith is your second line, with your third line being Bonino, Hartman, and Yarncock. Tolvanen, a lot of people expecting him to sort of be in the mix for rookie of the year, being in the top nine and sort of maybe even push for top 6 minutes, sent down to start the season. My gut feeling here, and at least from some things that have been implied by some beat writers that I've both read about and talked to myself, don't be surprised if he's up sometime around December, Christmas time, turn of the year. It looks like they want him to just get a little bit more acclimated to North America, but they like what they have there. And so it's sort of like a start the season down there, get a ton of minutes, and then we're going to bring you back up. At least that's the expectation. Things, obviously, as George already said at the top of the show, here early in the season, things are very fluid and they change. So you don't know how it's going. But if you have him, because Tolvanen was drafted in a decent amount of leagues himself, probably really not worth it. I know this is a bit obvious statement, not worth it to really hold him on to your team with it being such an unknown thing. In New Jersey, Jasper Bratt, who was one player that, George and I were looking at and talking about in terms of potential breakout players, at least that we were speculating about a couple of games ago, fractured jaw, going to keep him out at least a few weeks, and that sort of led to the team re-signing Stafford. Top line is going to be, as expected, Hershier, Hall, and Palmieri. Zacha and Marcus Johansson is on your second line. I would expect once Stafford gets up to speed before Bratt comes back that he's going to take that second line right wing spot. Newson starts off there, and, of course, Bratt will supplant both of them once he finally gets back into the lineup. For the New York Islanders, Andrew Ladd, undisclosed injury, has him starting the year on the IR, but they did do that retroactively, and he is skating with the team, so he could theoretically come back any time. I do expect him to miss at least a few more games before he does get back in the lineup. And the Killer Bees, at least that's what the Islanders hope, is your first line is Barzal, Bailey, and Bouvillier. Second line, Nielsen, Eberle, and Lee, at least as of right now. For the New York Rangers, Zibanejad, Buchnevich, and Kreider starts out as your top line. That's completely expected, and I do expect that line to pretty much stick together. Again, unless some of this has a crash and burn, I think that is going to be your top line all year. After that, it's an open question, and expect fluid changes. Second line being Kevin Hayes, VC, and Zuccarello. Third line being Hedl, Spooner, and Fast. And that line in particular is the line that I would sort of keep an eye on in terms of as the season develops. I think one or two of those players, particularly Heedle or Spooner, could be interesting pickups mid-time during the year. Not anytime soon, though, just a sort of players to sort of keep on the watch list. In Ottawa, Brady Tkachuk did indeed make the team, but he's got a groin injury that's got him listed as day-to-day, did not play that first game for the Ottawa Senators. Your first line is Duchesne, Bobby Ryan, and Dzingel. Second line is Colin White, Mark Stone, and Zach Smith. And I do expect Tkachuk to take Zach Smith's spot on the second line there with White and Stone. For the Philadelphia Flyers, a little bit of an interesting wrinkle here that wasn't expected by at least a lot of fantasy owners, but I don't necessarily think it's going to hurt you. First line is expected Couturier, Giroux, and Konecny. Second line, Nolan Patrick, Voracek, and Lindblom, where everybody's expecting it to be JVR. Again, I actually expect this to stick. It's early in the season, and you don't know how Lindblom's going to do, although I think he had a really good preseason. And last year, Patrick and Lindblom did seem to have some chemistry at the end of the year when they were put together, even though Lindblom didn't really put up any points. I expect that, obviously, to change for this year, which leaves your third line as the rookie Vorobiev, James Van Riemsdyk, and Simmons. And again, if Lindblom can produce decently on that second line with Patrick, suddenly you've got a true, or at least potentially a true top nine that is very dangerous, because both, you know, Vorobiev doesn't even have to do all that much, but I think he's capable of doing, of being, you know, pretty productive. But even if he doesn't do that much, JVR and Simmons on the second line together, Simmons already scoring a couple of goals in that first game, it does look like, at least offensively, it could be a pretty impressive season for the Philadelphia Flyers. For the Pittsburgh Penguins, we're starting out with Crosby, Hornquist, and Gaudreau together on the top line. Kessel, Malkin, and Hagelin make up your second line, which leaves Broussard, Rust, and Simon as your third line. So, again, you know, maybe it doesn't look quite as impressive because, again, you know, going back to a couple of years ago when they had all those three stars of Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel on three different lines, at least for the playoff runs, how are you going to sort of do that? You know, you still had two really good-looking top two lines. So it's not like Pittsburgh's not going to score or not be impressive. But I was really expecting Kessel to be on that third line, obviously early in the season, so it could develop that way. But sort of keep an eye on that situation. Another bit of a surprise in San Jose, and one that if this sticks, could burn George, especially when it comes to his keeper of Evander Kane finding himself, at least in the first game, on that third line, again, as George said at the top of the show, and I completely agree, don't make too much of it yet. And even if he does stick on the third line, I do not think in any way that it's a dead end or a really bad sign for Evander Kane and his potential production. He is still going to be getting power play time, although it does look like he's going to be on the second power play rather than the first power play for the San Jose Sharks. But getting to those lines, Meyer ends up on the top line left wing with Thornton and Pavelski, at least to start things out. LeBlanc, who'd spent all preseason on the third line, gets a second line slot to start things out with Couturier and Hurdle. And your third line is the rookie Somalia, Evander Kane, and Donskoy for the San Jose Sharks. In St. Louis, Fabry, it was finally determined to be, or at least admitted, to be a groin injury, a grade one groin injury for Fabry, but he is expected to be out at least 1 week before he comes back. But certainly it's not a knee problem, which was the issue the prior 2 years, and obviously generally considered a more serious issue, although, as we know, for hockey players, groin problems can linger and really sap their potential. But your lines start out with O'Reilly, Tarasenko, and Maroon as your top line. Second line is Shen, Schwartz, and Cryu, the rookie. And again, I'm sort of wondering, you know, because Cryu had a nice preseason, and he definitely sort of did well for himself, but I'm sort of wondering if he's getting sort of a nine-game look-see before he gets returned to minors. And St. Louis is hoping that by then Fabry will be back and active. Certainly a player to keep your eye on. Again, I would sort of certainly encourage putting Cryu on your watch list, especially if after a few games it looks like he's going to stick on that second line and he gets some chemistry with Shen and Schwartz. But sort of be aware of that, that I think it's likely going to be, like I said, a nine-game trial. Your third line there is Bozak, Steen, and Perron to start the year. In Tampa Bay, we don't know for sure yet because they haven't played a game yet, but Tyler Johnson, upper body injury listed as day-to-day. He is questionable to skating with the team, so I sort of expect him to miss the first game or two for the Lightning before he comes back. It does look like JT Miller is going to stay on the top line with Stamkos and Kucherov to start things out, and it does look like Gord, as George said, he should be pretty much all through August and September when it came when his game came up. Gord looking like he is going to be the right wing on that second line with Point and Palat, with your third line being Cirelli, Killorn, and Joseph the rookie, at least until Tyler Johnson does come back for Toronto. And I got to say, at least looking at these things, look at the lines to start. Obviously, not having Nylander is a big issue. And the one thing about Nylander that reports came out yesterday is that his agents are sticking and not moving from that $8 million per season ask. And that obviously is the big holdup. And if they don't move off of that, who knows when that contract situation is going to wrap up. But even if he does sign today and plays in one of their very next games, that top line, to top nine, does not look nearly as threatening to me as it did last year. The top six looks even stronger than it was last year. But, you know, especially in a team that doesn't have a defense, you kind of need to be what I'm suggesting about the Philadelphia Flyers, in my opinion. You got to have that great top nine to be able to sort of compete with Anderson, who's a good goalie, but giving up a lot of goals. And it might be because of that defense, but that defense really isn't that much better, you know, unless a couple of the younger guys take a huge leap defensively, getting to what those lines are and expected to be. You got Tavares centering Mariner and Hyman, Matthews centering Marleau and Enos, and then your third line is Kadri, Connor Brown, and Levo. And I still like, you know, Kadri as being, you know, a pretty decent guy to pitch in some offense, but Levo and Brown are not exactly offensive guys unless they find a whole another gear to their career that they haven't been able to show just yet. That's one of the reasons why I personally have been sort of campaigning for Kapanen 9, because I think he would sort of at least have more potential than what they got there. One man's opinion. I'm sure everybody in Toronto is cursing me right now. In Vancouver, top line, as we expected, of Horvat, Boeser, and Barchi. Second line, Sutter, Mott, and Virtanen. And your third line are the couple of rookies of Peterson, Goldobin, and Eriksson. And I got to tell you, again, only one game, but also looking back at preseason, both late in preseason when you're playing more NHL clubs as opposed to early preseason when you're playing half of AHL teams, Peterson and Goldobin looking really good to start off. They have a nice chemistry, and they looked, and they're very creative offensively. Now, again, it could be off early in the season thing, and you know, after a dozen or 20 games or so, people might sort of, you know, catch up on them and start having that book on them, and it might sort of be slow down offensively. But definitely a couple of guys that I am particularly keeping an eye on. If I am in a deeper league, I'm tempted to get these guys in the back of my roster and scare and stash them on my bench. And then in sort of, you know, situations where I can sort of use them or need them, play them. But I like both these guys a lot. And I think they are going to be widely owned by the end of the year in fantasy hockey. For the Vegas Golden Knights, touch with a lower body injury. He's on the IR listed as week-to-week to start off. Same thing with Eakin, lower body injury, IR week-to-week for the Vegas Golden Knights. Top line, just like last year, Carlson, Riley Smith, and Marshall. Second line, Stastny, Pacioretty, and Hula. I do expect Touch to take his place, Hula's place, that is, on that second line right wing when he does return for the Vegas Golden Knights. In Washington, and this is something I do want to ask you about, George, even though it's a minefield, Tom Wilson gets a suspension, 20 games. Now, pretty much all of us across the hockey world, both fantasy world and on the ice, have been saying whether you like him or hate him, it's time for Wilson to really get smacked. Well, it's past time for Wilson to really get smacked with a notable suspension. 20 games, quarter of the season, is pretty darn notable. George, how do you feel about the suspension? Do you think the number, did I characterize it correctly in terms of how you feel, that this was deserved and this is the right thing to do, right amount of games, especially in terms of maybe sending a message to other people in the league? But by extension, do you think this is a new NHL now, that they're going to give out suspensions like this on a regular basis, or do you need to see 3, 4, or 5 of them in a row before you really believe that the NHL is coming down, like a lot of us feel they should be, on these things and just have never consistently done? So 20-game suspension for Tom Wilson, George, what do you think?
Well, I think the NHL, I said they probably got it right. I don't think probably they did get it right. I think we're all, a lot of stuff goes into this, which is really a long conversation, which we don't really have time for. I think the NHL was sending a message to Tom Wilson, pretty much saying, are you effing kidding me? Didn't you meet with us over the summer? Didn't we tell you what you could and couldn't do? We told you, we did it again, you were going to get a long suspension. That's it. Tired. Just tired of it. It's almost like sending your kid to boot camp when you punished them so many times, you just throw your hands up. I don't know what to do anymore. That sort of thing. You know, that's what the NHL was doing here. They are just tired of it. Now, but they've tied their hands now. What happens the next time somebody other than Wilson does something like that? You can see how the NHL is going to get out of it. Well, you know, Wilson's been suspended 19 times. This guy's only been suspended. This is his third time. That's why we only gave him 4 games for a similar hit. You'll see that. You know, the NHL won't follow through. They never do. You know, they never follow through on these things. I wonder if this was sort of a answer because they got crushed for what they didn't give Max Domi. You know, suspending him for all the preseason games, which ended up being a joke. And they were criticized heavily for that. You know, so I think a lot of it goes into it. I think bottom line is, yes, I think he deserved it. I don't see how you can – Washington's irate over the suspension. Are you kidding me? I understand if you have to say that to protect your player and act like you're out on his side, but anyone who's irate over the suspension either doesn't know hockey, hasn't been paying attention, or is Tom Wilson's family, all right? Because he deserves it. I don't even doubt he deserves it. He's been suspended multiple times, took a run at a player. And listen, if I'm Washington, I'm pretty pissed off here because the first thing I'm thinking is, what the hell is he doing this in a freaking preseason game for? It meant nothing. Why are you hitting anybody in a preseason game? You're not trying to make the team. I mean, really, why are you doing it? I mean, seriously, do you have something wrong in your head that you have to keep doing this? You know, and it's funny. While you were going on with your line reports, I'm reading a from John Buchikos, who's a big hockey guy from ESPN, if you don't know who he is. And he's discussing with fans the Brad Marchand play the other night. And where he went after Orlov, it was a blowout game. Orlov did his little wave to the Bruins bench. In my mind, he got what he deserved, by the way. You don't do that kind of crap. But, of course, Capitol fans are like, well, how come Marchand doesn't get suspended for that? You know, listen, Marchand's no innocent little angel either. And if they would have suspended him, I wouldn't be crying about it. But it's apples and oranges. It's two different things. But it just lets you know where the NHL is going right now. And I said, it's also the public in general. You know, Tom Wilson fans, the Capitol fans, now they want Marchand suspended for what he did. Even though he didn't do anything. Really, I didn't do anything wrong. Of course he did. You waved at the bench twice. What did you think was going to happen? In the old-time NHL, that would have been a bench-clearing brawl. You know, so you deserve what you got. And plus, from what I saw of it, I've seen the fight a couple of times. And Marchand, like I said, he could have got suspended, but it pretty much was a willing combat. Both guys are willing combatants, so I don't have an issue with it. But bottom line is this. I wonder what's going to happen now the next time someone does something like this. Are we going to see another 20-game suspension? Or are we going back to 3, 4 games? You know, I think the NHL is hoping that they sort of, you know, kill two things with one stone here. That they got through to Wilson to cut the crap out. Now you're going to lose $1 million, and that it stops the stuff in the NHL. That the rest of the players take notice. Oh, man. You know, what if this is the new norm now? This sets precedent. Then I'm going to get 20 games. You know, I think they're hoping that happens too. But I can almost guarantee you, the next time something happens, the NHL will cop out. Well, no, this guy hasn't been suspended 7 times. Whatever Wilson's been suspended. You know, he hasn't been suspended this many times, so he only gets this amount of games. Wilson was suspended because he had this many suspensions. I can see this happening, in which case it'll stop nothing.
Unfortunately, George, I agree with your entire assessment. You know, that I do think that's exactly an NHL, you know, thinking, which has proven to have never worked before, that they come down every once in a blue moon with something really hardcore like this, and I hope that everybody takes notice and it's going to sort of end up changing behavior, and it really just never does. All right, looking at the Washington line combinations, we are starting off with Connolly replacing Wilson on top line with Tenetsov and Ovechkin. Varana, certainly a guy to watch here on this team, earning that left wing spot in the second line with Backstrom and Oshie. Eller, Burakovsky, and Stevenson being your third line. In Winnipeg, Connor, Chatelier, and Wheeler returns as your top line. And the interesting thing here is the tweaks they made the second, third line, Little, Laine, and Perrault being the third guy left wing on that second line. One of the I had said that a guy I or a couple of shows ago when we were talking about breakout players that Rozalek is a guy on the third line being the center there that I'm sort of looking at, and the fact that they moved Eller down to play with him only sort of reinforces that to me with Vesalainen being the left wing with those playing with those two, and it very much makes me feel the same way I said about Evander Kane. When you look at sort of, you know, even if this stays early in the season, so we don't know if it's really going to stick like this, but even if it does stick like this, just like Evander Kane, I think Eller will essentially be just fine. Eller's still going to be getting power play time, probably not on the first power play unit, but still on the second power play unit. So it's sort of not a complete loss, and it's not like his value, it's sort of the bottom drops out of there. All right, George, let's get to the goalie report. I can't imagine it being like too long, like I just sort of went on and on and on. But what key information about the goalies around the National Hockey League do you have to kick us off at the goalie report for this year? George?
Yes, I can promise it's not all that long. Well, there's just accounting news here as far as what's going to happen. Craig Anderson is going to start for Ottawa tomorrow. Anybody really care about that? Toronto, we know Sparks is going to start on Sunday. Frederick Anderson will start tomorrow. Nice of them to tell us that. You might care about Sparks in daily lineup leagues. Once again, good team. Maybe you throw him in there. Philadelphia, Stolarz was waived on today, actually. I assume he'll pass the waivers and be sent down to the AHL, but maybe yes, maybe no. They did claim Picard earlier in the week off waivers from Toronto. Toronto actually put a couple of players on waivers, three, but two goalies. Picard was claimed by Philadelphia. McElhinney was claimed by Carolina, and that was because Scott Darling is going to be out for a couple of weeks, it looks like, well, with a lower body injury. So keep that in mind there. For the backup for Mrazek is McElhinney. Interesting what's going to happen there when Darling's back, because McElhinney is a pretty solid backup goaltender. Columbus, they did a little cute little thing. Even though they had their season opener last night, they saved Bobrovsky for tonight, for the home opener. So if you're wondering why he wasn't starting last night, that's the reason why. This was announced days ago. There's no injury concern here. They did this purely to save Bobrovsky for the home opener. Like I said, cute, but who? In the end, it doesn't really matter. Chicago, Crawford's on the IR, has a concussion right now. And once again, you take this with a grain of salt. They think he can be back really next week or the week after that. So a couple of weeks out for him. Maybe yes, maybe no. Forsberg was hit by a puck during practice. Was hurt. They didn't say where. Yeah, but that's the reason he's not playing right now. Cam Ward was going to start anyway. For the Islanders, Greiss started last night, played well. We heard Trotz say this, that he really wants one goaltender. So he wants one. He doesn't know which one it is. He wants one to win by playing well. Right now, Greiss certainly has a head start there. We expect him to start tomorrow in Nashville, a much tougher competition. They play San Jose on Monday. If Greiss can play well in those two games, he'll have a big leg up on Robin Leonard as far as who the starter is. Philadelphia also placed Alex Lyon on IR, lower body injury. Devils, Schneider, IR. Once again, no surprise here. Devils only have one game this week, so it's really no big deal to put him on IR. He wasn't going to play game one anyway, so he can return pretty much any time after that. Until then, we will see Mr. Kincaid playing. Pittsburgh, Jarry Legg on IR, the non-roster IR, whatever that means. Same difference. That's Tristan Jarry. He's on IR. St. Louis, they I love these names. Opulka, he's a hip. Once again, non-roster IR, doesn't really matter. Jake Allen just started there. Vancouver, Thatch and Demko, non-roster IR, concussion. Which you're going to see a lot of these things. NHL, like all the other sports, are taking concussions very seriously. Want to make sure they don't have anybody. They want to be very careful. Colorado, Grubauer, they say that he will play one of the first three games. So he didn't play game one. That means he either plays the next game or the game after that. Varlamov, though, is the starter here. Now, I do think, and I know we speculated this during the preseason shows, that eventually they'll try and trade Varlamov to get Grubauer a job. Gave up too much to acquire him. The problem is, once again, you and I have beaten this topic to death over the last, 10, 12 years. You just cannot get value back when you trade a goaltender. You can't do it unless a top team, a team that thinks they're going to the Cup, loses their goaltender for the year. You know, then you might be able to do it, but it's going to be tough there. But Grubauer is obviously the backup goalie to Varlamov. Unless Varlamov gets hurt or doesn't play well or is moved, that's going to be the situation, I think, for most of the season here. Or, once again, if Colorado is eventually out of playoff contention, but by then your fantasy team may not care. Neuwirth, lower body injury. He's out at least the weekend for Philadelphia. Brian Elliott had a strong game one in Vegas. So, once again, this is a situation worth watching here because we know Elliott, he's when hot, he's a very good goalie, you know, and when playing well. The problem is he tends to wear down, tends to get hurt. And then Neuwirth comes in. He'll play well for a while, but he has the same exact problem. And he's not quite as good as Elliott, but he wears down. He gets hurt. That's why it's hard to take Philadelphia all that seriously as a contending team because they really don't have a goal. They don't have one goalie they can rely on. If they did, they'd be a dangerous team. But goaltending is what wins in the NHL. You certainly want Elliott if he's available. And you're starting him when he is playing. But it's hard to rely on Brian Elliott long term.
Yeah, you got to wonder if we're sort of looking here at the Philadelphia Flyers around the trade deadline and Picard has solidified himself as the starter. I only say that half-jokingly for the Philadelphia Flyers because of the very reasons that you did just say. All right, George, thanks for the goalie report. As always, I'll let you go as I wrap things up for today. On Monday's show, one of the sort of focuses that I'm going to have is talking about players to watch and players who are low-owned that maybe you should try and go out and get, especially if you're not in such a shallow league. So we do have lots to talk about as the year gets cooked up. Obviously, the Fantasy Report is going to be a regular feature every show with the IR, line combinations, goalie report, and waiver wire recommendations. Not going to do waiver wire recommendations for today's show since, as George has said, we're a couple of games into the season. You should be pretty good to go with your lineups as they already are. I will sort of give a little bit of a teaser of some players that, you know, when I give waiver wire recommendations, if you're new to a listener to the show, they basically have to be owned 60% or less for me to sort of bring them up. But players who are teetering right on that line who I think you should sort of check out if they are available in your league that are a little bit higher than that. Jeff Carter, 76%. As George always says about him, you know what you're going to get with Jeff Carter. It might not be spectacular point-per-game production, but you know you're going to get 27 to 33 goals, 27 to 33 assists, somewhere in that range, right around a 60-point player year in and year out. It's hard to pass that up, even over a player who you think has the potential to outdo that but has not proved himself. Konechny at 63% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, and he has the advantage. If you're in a league that has the three different forward designations of center, left wing, right wing, rather than, say, wingers, instead of left wing and right wing. In particular, he is eligible, at least in Yahoo leagues, and all three of the forward positions. Obviously going to be playing on that top line with Couturier and Giroux and such a great line that they were last year. He's just above 60% owned as well. Palmieri, who don't forget was sort of had nagging injuries last year, pretty productive player himself, proving himself to be a guy who's going to put 27, 28, push 30 goals per year, especially playing on the top line with improvement Hershier and Hall. He's at 60% owned. Mark Stone for the Ottawa Senators, I know is a lot of people feel that Ottawa Senator players are like kryptonite right now, but he is playing for a contract. He's playing for, you know, even if he's not planning to leave there, which a lot of people are speculating that he is, he's trying to rebuild there. Contract year, new contract, unrestricted free agent. It's usually a good thing for a lot of players. Some players do fold under that situation, but I don't think he was very afraid of it or he wouldn't have taken the one-year contract in arbitration like he did. He's 60% owned. So those are a couple of players that are high owned and have a really good chance of already being taken in your league. But if they're not, and you have a spot that you need on your, especially opening year with maybe some injuries that we'd already talked about, he's another guy that I would definitely look at. So come back with us every Monday, every Friday at 2 o'clock all year long for all your hockey needs, both on the both on the ice and for fantasy hockey. Have a good hockey week, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.